She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of the Fairfax Companies, true leaders in the business of sustainability, and true supporters of numerous community efforts, all helping to create a safer, healthier planet for all of us. Hats off to them. Thanks for their support of Mrs. Green's World and for everything they do to make our community and our planet safer and healthier. Okay, I am very excited about our show today. Finally, a show about fun and excitement and learning and possibility and change. The name of our show is Natural Pod, Kid and Planet Friendly. And we have with us as our guest a wonderful, inspiring woman, Bridget. Let me say it right, Bridget. Alamez, is that right?
You got it, Gina.
Got it. I nailed it. Who is the founder of Natural Pod and the CEO of Play. You got to love that. I had the pleasure of spending time with Bridget at a social venture network conference last spring and was honestly captivated by her story about how Natural Pod came about. And now we are all going to learn about how Bridget and her team are truly changing the landscape for children in many arenas. So, Bridget, welcome, and we finally got you scheduled.
That's fantastic. I'm super excited to be here today with you, Gina, and share some of the wonderful stories and the impact we've had for many thousands of children throughout the world.
I know. It's so great. You are an inspiration. You are changing the world. That's just not something I put up there, and I think you need to think about starting to clone yourselves, because we need a lot more of you on the planet this day. But the best first question is always, tell us about Natural Pod and the very compelling story of how it all started. It's a great story.
Absolutely. Well, for me, one of the most fundamental things that happened to for me as a part of my life is having children. I'm sure many people can resonate with once you have a child, how it completely can change the way that you think, what you want to do, and what you're really empowered to be. And so, I guess 12 years ago, my son, Ark, who will be 13 in the spring, God help me.
Good luck with that. You'll need some natural play area.
Oh, yes. Well, he's almost as tall as me now, so I always go, wow, they grow so quickly. But when he was very, very young, he had some significant allergic reactions to many products that are out there in the world. A lot of the chemicals that are in, some of the chemicals that are in toys, and had a severe reaction to lead. And from that experience, obviously, as any parent wants to do is provide the best for their children. And so we did, Alan and I, we did a lot of research into what really is in children's products and what really is in their learning environment. And it was from that conversation 12 years ago that the idea of Natural Pod began, but it wasn't really until our second child, Arla, was born 3 years later when we were home and quarantined in our house for 8 weeks with an illness, that it was like we really wanted to make it happen. And from that point on, it was a commitment to ensuring that all children had access to beauty, to sustainability, and to allowing their imaginations to truly soar. And it's been an incredible journey ever since. And to raise our children during that journey, and for them to witness the compassion, the commitment, and the work that we do in the world is really very, very exciting.
It's really, really exciting. And so many times we have people on that something really wonderful came out of, from a place of pain with children or confusion or what the heck is going on and what is the skin allergy. And fortunately, it's led to many wonderful outcomes like Natural Pod. And I don't know if I asked you this, and if I did, I forgot because it's been a while. How did you come up with the name Natural Pod? It's so important. Naming is so important. How did you come up with that one?
Well, the story is that we're providing, we're shelling some peas for our son when he was starting to eat, solid food, and the pod, it fell on the ground. there was a message, and of course there was four of us in our family, and typically in a pod there's four peas, typically, and of course it came together for a natural pod, and also for us she was about pod based of impact. So we know that ultimately we'd love to have all children have access to these types of learning environments and experiences in their home, but having pods of impact. It's kind of like a vision that we have is trying to really have these innovative spaces where children can come in and out of that pod experience. And then our other part of our vision is to really reduce our carbon footprint and have pod bases of manufacturing really close to the source. So as we grow and expand into other parts of the world, we do really want to have things as closely as possible to really, really follow that message of sustainability and authentic impact in our business.
And, later on in the show, I'd like to go into some of the really Herculean efforts that you go to make sure that there is an environmental trail that is fully transparent. You do a lot, but I want to continue now on this. People might say, well, isn't all play natural? And I thought about it a lot after I met you and preparing for the show. It really isn't in some ways when there's, play is the teacher or the schoolyard person telling the kids what to do and saying, this is how we're going to have fun. So talk about your concept, your vision for what natural play really is.
Absolutely. And I think that is the most fundamental piece for me is that, we all play, whether we're 8, 18 or 88, we all play in our world and our lives in some capacity. And I think as we get older as adults, a lot of that fear of play and creativity kicks in because we're more aware of what we're doing, right? When you see a child playing, they're not really thinking about, who's watching me? What am I doing? They're really in the deep magic of play. So when you see a child, when they're completely in the moment, they have their own goals in mind. Their imaginations are fully engaged, and they experiment to solve the questions that they have posed for themselves. So the best way that we can do that is to allow the play to be truly expressive and exploratory. So it doesn't take to direct the play or to instruct the play. So if you can think about this, it's like, and I find myself, I have to constantly remind myself, like brushing my teeth every day, which is I'll brush my teeth today. But for me, it's reminding the children that I'm not here to say, hey, let's build a house today. Oh, look at that. Let's make a railway train. Let's do these different things. It's more about providing the materials and the objectivity of them to truly have that invitation to play and to create based on the questions that they've posed for themselves.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, of course, through boredom comes creativity, right? So if we're not here to really entertain the child, we're here really to really transform them to allow them to really think outside the box.
And it's so funny, the story that it just reminds me of is, at Christmas time when we'd get what we thought were just the best toy or present, and I don't mean sometimes educational, and the kids would take the toy out of the box and spend the rest of the morning playing with the box. It was like, oh, great, they're getting in the box, they're making something out of the box. So I think that speaks volumes about what you're talking about and such an affirmation, provide the opportunity. But the other important thing, there are many other important components to your very intentional company and community. There is a role, I believe, for natural play in the development of children and community. What is that, and how important is the role of play in the development of children?
Well, it's such, for me, there was a time when play was king, right? There was multiple times.
And you learn so much when you're playing. You do.
Yeah, you absolutely do, and problem solving. And there was more time to create and connect and simply be, right? So, of course, as things developed and changed in the world, A lot of that has become, a privilege, or something that's happened on a rare occasion. Of course, that's changing, right? So you see now that many people are really embracing the great outdoors and really considering, the impact of their learning environment. But really, natural play really enables children to think symbolically. So it really supports the development of two really key things, which is self-esteem and self-regulation. And when you have those two aspects, going into learning about some key things around, whether it be around literacy learning or numeracy, you've got the foundation, right? So it's a kind of building that foundation of how they can navigate through some of those pieces by developing their own emotional intelligence and certainly increasing their self-esteem.
So I'm writing that down. That's why there was a pause, because I want to get some really good pieces for when we tweet about the show. You talked about self-esteem. I think that's pretty obvious to everybody. When you talk about self-regulation, what do you mean? Expand on that just a little bit.
Absolutely. So what that means is when a child is really learning to be within themselves and to create, so when you're looking at a child in play, when they're playing with something that's really open-ended and allows for the transformation of the child to articulate what they're feeling inside in the external way of what they're creating during that play. So imagination, as a key piece around that, is key to literacy development. And really, it's a magical place where the children can act out their stories and connecting them to their past and their future, right, through that imaginative play. So that self-esteem piece is like, I can do it. I can create something. It's like when a child builds a tower.
Right.
And they build it really, really, really high. And They can't wait to knock it down, but they're waiting, they're balancing all those blocks perfectly, one on top of another, right? And after they finish balancing it, the first thing that they say is, I did it.
Right, right.
And if you can imagine that each child can have that one moment every day, like, I did it, I can do it. It's that internal message of building up that anything is possible, right? So that is the beauty and the richness of that is, like, they're not playing with an object that is going to give them immediate gratification or is going to give them an outcome that's pre-described. They're building something for themselves or creating something for themselves and really testing those boundaries. And there's a photograph of this young boy, who was building something, and the look on his face and the intent of his fingers of how he put that last piece on his tower. And then he ran to me and he said, I did it. It's a memory that I'll have for the rest of my life,
right,
and how important those moments are.
He left a footprint. What about, can we just go off the grid just a little bit, or, a little sidebar about when I was thinking about it as a person who has a background in social services working with at-risk kids, it seems to me that if you really are engaging kids in play that's building their self-esteem and teaching them about self-regulation, there's not going to be a big problem in these environments with bullying and things like that. Is that a natural connection, or did I just build a bridge that really isn't there?
No, you've got it. I mean, for us, one of the key things that we always consider around is how do we have very strong social engagement and social interaction and collaboration in our learning environment and creating more opportunity for co-creating. And really expanding the spaces where, more than one or two, three, four, five, six, even the entire class of children or group of children, if it's in a home-based situation, they can play and interact together. And it's just getting your voice heard. I mean, a lot of the situations that we're seeing with bullying and social inclusion and et cetera, it's just really around self-expression.
Yep.
And the key foundation. So it's like if I look back, I think those fundamental early years, if children had access to really being able to truly go deep into their play and really navigate the internal and external world through their expression of their work, it makes for a different human being, because they are really more in a place of peace and acceptance of others.
Right. And it's just that it's engaged in such a very different way. I want to talk about, sometimes I gloss over things because I know and I've done the research, but I want to share with our very, very deep and committed listeners about, let's walk through, and even if we have to go to break and come back to it, let's walk through what happens. Give us an example of a project someone calls you from high school or elementary school X and says, Bridget, we want to learn more about what you're doing. You know, we've looked at your website, and can you come do a site visit? Is that typically how something starts? And then what happens? What's the process?
Absolutely. Great question. And this process can happen in many different forms or shapes. Typically, what we see happen is that majority of connections come from an innovative educator or
right.
principal or daycare operator or family. You know, it really, there's not sort of one particular, you know, type that will connect with us. It's really people that have seen something, that have seen the beauty or they've seen the connection with the,
right.
or the piece around the joy. And they go, look, what does that mean? What does that look like? So for us, we really try to look at the space itself, really making the most of the environment, the natural light, the natural beauty of the current environment, what they already have, what works, what doesn't work, really understanding their vision. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's really great to come in and provide this context, but it needs to be really connected back to what is the intention. So we ask people to envision their space as a blank canvas. You know, imagine, how would you engage art? How would you engage nature? What invitations to play would you want to bring into your canvas? How do we access the indoors and outdoors? How do we really bring that together? So we think about those key things. We typically look at a floor plan to really understand where the shadows are, look at the space, the flow,
right.
and then we make recommendations, again, you know, based on we want to reuse. We want to think about what they already have. How can we add to that beauty? You know, what are the ages of children that we're trying to impact, the number of children, because we typically try to, you know, seat children in communities. For us, everything is open-ended, which means that it has multiple possibilities, like our large community table, which is incredibly popular and people love it, is often used as a stage or as a building platform. So it's like thinking about, well, what else could it be in a learning environment? Are benches, you know, become balance beams or bridges or tunnels or ramps, or children sit on the floor and use them as tables? It's like always considering what else can it do? The other piece I'd like to add is, you know, the impact that we're seeking here is to really have a learning environment. Again, this could be at home or in a school or a daycare setting or elementary, high school, community center. I mean, really where children congregate, right? Is thinking about where did it come from? What is it made of? Who made it? And what else can I do with it?
Right. And when you talk about, expand a little bit more on there. When I first talked to you, I thought it was just like for mostly elementary schools. That would be the best place. But when I read about it, there's middle schools and kindergartens. And I thought about daycare centers. I don't even like to call them that, but child care centers. And there are great
yeah.
ones out there. And you even do things with hospice and special needs students around the world. So it's really not just for a certain demographic. It's a very expansive approach. Is that reflective of your mission?
Well, yes, absolutely. And I mean, ultimately, we want to see all children and adults in the future in a space of beauty, in a space that really reflects, you know, the environment and, again, answers those key questions I mentioned about where did it come from, who made it, et cetera. You know, when you consider a space and you think about where children congregate and usually where it comes from, typically most people in the learning environment space will consider the early years as the most place where they'd want to start, you know, infant toddler care, preschool, kindergarten, et cetera. But really it doesn't stop there. And the collaborative project-based, inquiry-based learning is becoming quite popular in other learning environments, elementary schools and high schools, and having that continuity of care. You know, it comes back to the piece we talked about before around, you know, we don't stop playing. We don't stop collaborating and connecting. And when you look at organizations that are very successful, like take a Google, for example, and, you know, majority of their working environments are open and collaborative. They're not in single desk forms where people work individually. So we're really trying to take that individual desk and chair philosophy out of our learning environments and bring in more of the collaborative, more of the beauty, and more of the possibility of how can we, you know, convene a conversation. How do we really think outside of a box around a particular project or idea that we're exploring?
And the fun, and not it having be just a static piece of furniture. I mean, when you look at your website, it just reeks of fun. You want to go more. You want to learn more. We are going to have to take our first break. I can't believe the first 20 minutes is gone. And I'm like so involved in the answer that I'm forgetting to ask the next question, which is always a good show. It's a very good sign when that happens. But when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the role of educators once the process is in place and going forward, and some more about the learning outcomes. We've got lots more to talk about, everybody. Stay here with us. We are with Bridget Alamez from Naturopod, a kid and planet-friendly opportunity. Stay here with me.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us. This is the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, and remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and today it's so great to be talking about thinking about fun and children and the impact that play can have on them. And joining me is Bridget Alamez. She is the founder of Naturopod and the CEO of Play. The name of her company is Naturopod, and it's a kid and planet-friendly company. Bridget, thanks for being with us. We're making it happen.
Loving it. Thanks, Gina.
And you know, what happens for me is you get, you know, to me always is pace of the leader, pace of the team. And leaders only do one thing in my estimation. They inspire. They don't dictate. They don't mandate. They inspire. So once an educator is engaged, what happens, how key is their role in terms of facilitating and supporting natural play? I mean, if there are resistant staff and if kids have to learn, what is their role in trying to accomplish what you want, which is for not a lot of mandated play, but creating experiences that kids will never forget? I know that's a long question, but you got it. What is the role of the inspired leader that brought you there in the first place?
I know this is probably the most important question, and I'm so glad you asked it. Because
yay, I love when I get a star for a good question.
No, it's an awesome question, because you know what? Adults really can support natural play by first recognizing it and valuing it for themselves, right? So, you know, I always ask this question during my workshops with educators, and I say, you know, how do you play? How do you engage in your own personal creative process? When we as adults can actually model play for ourselves, it really does, you know, deeply support the work we do with our children. So it's important that we value play for ourselves as individuals before we can model and really inspire that in others, right? So what I think about, and I've always asked this question, is what was one of your favorite childhood memories? And 95% of educators have told me, and I've spoken now to 27,000 educators across North America, is that, you know, it's really about an outdoor play experience, as I really remember. And so I ask them to hold on to that memory, find some way to bring that memory into the learning environment, and then figure out a way of taking that first step of really showing the children what is one of your own personal passions. You know, do you like to knit? Do you run marathons? Are you a poet at heart? Do you like, you know, do you like to cook? What is it that you do in terms of play? So share your playful self with your colleagues and your students, and then you'll find that there's new ways of teaching present moments yourself, because you're actually embodying that play piece. So when you risk teaching something with your whole self, you're sharing a vulnerability that builds trusting relationships and leads to rich encounters for everyone in your space. Remember that everyone has the magic within, right? So it's sort of like be present and be aware of that magic. One piece that I often see is people say to me, well, how do I stop this? You know, how do I get into natural play? And I'm like, it is, I don't want to make it as simple as literally getting on the floor, but one of the things that we can do as adults is, you know, is picking up a blank piece of paper or a series of blocks or an open-ended object that we can create, whether it be pine cones or rocks or blocks, whatever it may be, and just start creating. And then the conversation will come. The children will say, what are you building? What are you creating? And then you say, well, what do you see? So you're asking more questions, but you're answering less, but you're modeling the natural play behavior. So again, you know, if we can inspire everybody in the world to really, you know, think about how do you like to play and model that, because learning isn't always about reading a textbook or, you know, going through a series of questions or tests, whatever it may be. It's like it's a lived experience. We really remember things and we deeply experience them. It could be as, you know, when you go to a phenomenal Indian restaurant and you taste the spices of the food. Well, it's very different to someone saying to you, you know why I had this and I had that. And you're like, well, what did that taste like? And what did that feel like? And so it's an interesting thing where it's like, you know, embody the play for yourself. And then you can really inspire and model others in your community or in your learning environment.
And the thing that gets me so excited about it is the whole, all of the research about multiple intelligences and the way that kids learn. Every kid doesn't learn by sitting down at a desk and memorizing is, and of course, what I think that's like the worst form of teaching that you can do. And most of our schools are sit down, fold your hands at your desk, be quiet, and here we're going to go about, you know, memorizing the times table, and here's the core curriculum. And yet, what you're doing can still support that very creative learning that to me leads to reaching those scores and opening your mind to analyze and figure things out differently. I'm probably a frustrated educator every day. It's like, no, this is how we can get kids to move forward and really learn some outcomes, like have some outcomes through natural play. So I'm getting really excited about this, and you know that I am. What do you do about the I don't even think I want to ask that question. They're the recalcitrants, the people that have forgotten to play and think we've got to stick to the core curriculum and we've got to do this. Is there a way that they eventually come around and get in touch with their inner child or some wonderful thing?
You know, there is, and it's. I mean, you can't capture everybody, and I
right,
see it when I do. Exactly, this just never works that way. But I do see that when I do my workshops, there is like 70% of people are captivated. They're seeing it going, wow, you know, this natural play isn't about learning a certain philosophy. It's about really channeling some of the key things within myself that I really value. And that, you know, as a child, that really helped with my own, you know, education and development as I was growing up. But there's always, you know, always people that, you know, have done certain things a certain way for a very, very long time. But, you know, it's really hard to argue when you see the children, how they engage and interact with each other, when they are really connecting and creating that magic of their learning, when it could be through a times table. It could be, you know, going outside and collecting a series of rocks and coming back and, you know, and creating it, you know, the times table through the number of rocks they've created, right?
Right, so, right.
Again, right, exactly. And so the other cool thing is that I think that people often say, well, you know, I can't do that. I don't have the money. And, you know, how do I make that happen? It's like, well, it's not even about a monetary value. It's about what within yourself can you have access to, and things that we have access to in our natural environment, like things that are outside, are free for us to use and to enjoy and to recycle and to really form that educational process. So to me, this is a way that everybody can have access to really engaging in that deeper connection of how to, you know, enrich the children's lives through creating the curriculum and then having that flow in that time. Like natural play is not about, it's just about making time for it, allowing that time for the children to create. And you can't necessarily schedule it in and say, you know, from between 9 and 9:45 today, we're going to do natural play, right? You know, it's, you know,
that's kind of counterintuitive. Exactly.
It is.
Oh,
well, it
my
is,
gosh.
But it's kind of cute, but it's almost like, well, you know, it's about you using your intuition. If you think about a learning environment, I love this thinking. It's like, well, when you're in the space, you're really the holder of space. You're holding that container of learning for a child, which means that you're intuitively picking on, you know, what does Mark need? What does Susie need? What does this person need? And, you know, how do I really support the children? So it's moving things around, having that flexibility, having invitations to play, having different things to pull out and create, as you're seeing those opportunities. And I'm not talking about free play where children have, you know, access to whatever they want for 6-7 hours a day, and more about having intention around what are we providing for them to create with, and how open-ended is it really?
I so get it. That's how true learning occurs, in a very easy and authentic way. I mean, it's very exciting to me. You know, we've had one of my buddies in the world since I started Mrs. Green is a guy named Stephen Ritz, and he's the Green Bronx Machine. And what you said about space and the outdoors, I always think of kids in the South Bronx or in, you know, inner city Harlem. And people like Stephen Ritz are saying, if you have a quarter of a block in your neighborhood, you've got a community garden. If you have a rooftop, you have an opportunity to grow something. And he, of course, is moving mountains and catching on fire. You know, one of his YouTube videos has about almost 1 million views because he's saying, you know, si se puede. It's like, we can do this. It is possible. Mm. And it's through fun. It is really, and it's like you said, it's not just about everybody go out and play in the playground. I mean, there's intentional play and learning that doesn't feel heavy, and it really can happen anywhere. So let me ask.
Absolutely can. Yeah.
I want to ask you this. What is, like, describe, let's just say a principal comes to you and they say, we only have one classroom, for example, that we can use. It's an empty classroom. And let's get going. Can you walk us through a little bit, since this is not a TV show but a radio show? Talk a little bit about what are some of the things that you would actually put in there to facilitate learning through play? Is that a fair question? I want to give our listeners more of a visual, and then send them to your website.
No, it's an excellent question. I think that space, whether it be, and we've done work in sort of connecting back, we've done work with the very first eco preschool in Harlem and New York City, Petrie Preschool. And I remember walking into that space and I can always see the possibilities. So the first thing that you think about when you see a space is, what are the possibilities, right? What can we really look at having here? And typically, if it's one space that people want to do as a starting point, we want to create a space that will be applicable to all ages, a space where children and adults alike can come and engage in an activity, whether it be used for a particular curriculum, a project, or a particular subject, or it could be used for parents to come and have meetings. We have to really think about what is the intention of the space. So for us, you know, we always start with the foundation pieces. And for us, it's more about where we're going to store some of the objects in terms of creating these invitations to play. And one of the things in any learning environment is storage is a huge issue for many educators, I'm sure.
Right.
A lot of them are all kind of nodding their heads going, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
about. We have a lot
about.
Of teachers who listen, they're saying, Yep,
storage is always an issue. So it's really firstly thinking about what do you want to have in the space. So we think about, from a storage perspective, we create storage that is accessible from both sides, so there's no backs on the storage. We have seating that can go on and off the storage, again, or adding that flexibility to the
right.
space. And we provide just enough that you would rotate objects. So you might want to bring in books or blocks or games, whatever it may be, but it's enough just that you can just rotate it. But we try to really encourage to have only things in the space that are going to be accessed, as opposed to trying to store things in the space, right? Just to kind of put that in perspective.
Right.
The next thing that we look at is, you know, how do we engage the conversation around collaboration? And then we'll look at the tables and the benches. So we are very strong advocates of benches because, you know, what is a chair used for? It's really typically it's used for sitting, and children are knowing, well, I can't do anything with my chair but sit on it, right?
Right.
So typically
yes.
Well, I mean, it's again, we're trying to just open the conversation again, you know. We certainly do put chairs in some of our learning environments, but majority of them will take the benches because then an adult can sit comfortably of any age. They come at various different heights. And again, they can be used in theater style, make a giant balance beam or a big snake in the middle of the classroom or the learning environment. So you've really got that true flexibility. The next thing that we'll look at is how do we create that magic and wonder and imagination in the space. So it could be by putting in a loft, where children can play up and above and below. Again, I've seen many adults. We've got many adults in those lofts, and a few of them have been napping in there as well, which is pretty cool. And then they'll take something like a play stand or imagination station, and they're pretty much the fundamental pieces that most people will start with. And again, you know, it's really for us. It's really dependent on the space, depending on the age group that people are trying to serve and support within their learning environment. But you'll soon see that, you know, because the furniture itself is one color, it's the canvas, right? So we say that let the furniture be the canvas, and let the educators and the children and the families and the adults bring in the beauty of the color through plants, through art, through books. So it's very important to us that the pieces that we have in there form a blank canvas. We provide the canvas, but really the art comes into it through that engagement of play.
It's just, you know, it makes me want to, this sounds really weird, but it makes me want to just go outside and get engaged. And I will tell you what I was flashing on is we recently went on a vacation to the Pacific Northwest, and we went to Hood River and we went to Anacortes in the San Juan Islands. And it's magical for me to watch my husband, who is 62, when he gets near water and there's any possibility for, you know, looking at the pools and rocks, yeah, and exploring and finding pieces of beauty. And it's the little boy in him, and then the little girl in me comes out, and you want to put your feet in the water. And with flowers, kids are so drawn to them. So it's that kind of extension. And then when you get a group together, it becomes just a growth and a natural expansion of that. It just makes me happy to talk about it, because I can really feel what you're saying, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely it does. It's those magical moments in life. And it's not just, again, as being a child. It's those moments of like, wow, I really value the beauty of that pool that I provided, or putting my feet in the water and connecting back to nature. It's those values that we're really trying to instill in the children of our future. And we hope that, you know, through our learning environments, we're convening larger conversations around the importance of natural play and empowering adults and families to really, you know, make decisions that will heighten and inspire the children of the future.
And it really is so true about playing, just sitting down with kids and saying playing. If you take Legos, if you take building blocks, if you take a couple of pieces of paper, climbing on anything. I mean, my grandson is a perfect example. The hardest thing for him to do is sit in a chair. So any opportunity, and he's really, really, really smart. So it's like, get that imagination started. And, you know, I really want to not be off the air and then not have talked to you about what I think is such a critical part of your company, because it did come from a place of non-toxic items and how important it was, and that you couldn't find anything except brightly colored plastic toys that are probably, you know, touching you. There's lead, there's so many things that I read about toys, even now in this day and age. So I think we should talk about, you know, we're going to go to break in about 2 minutes, but go into a little bit of detail about the authentic quality from which Natural Pod was born. You've delivered, I think I read somewhere, over like 27,000 products. It's probably more by now. And how?
Yes,
right. I mean, that's like, when I say that from people's website, it's like everybody isn't updating their website daily. But even then, 27,000, it's not like you're on your 3,000th, I can say it, piece of, you know, of growing. It's really a big number, and you're making an impact. So let's start. I don't want to start with the, because we're going to go to break in 1 minute. But when we come back, let's talk about your commitment to the environment. Where is the wood sourced? The answer is not going to be we chop from old growth forests. All of the things that you consider in the literal manufacturing and delivery and the kind of standards that you follow in placing these things in kids' environments to make sure that they're happy, you know, that it's not harming their health and causing some other kind of learning disability, and what kind of, you know, treatments you use and all of those things. I think our listeners really want to know. Give me some details here. So can we cover that when we come back?
Absolutely. I can't wait to do that.
I'm sure you're the right person to ask. So everybody, please stay here with me. I don't know about you, but I'm having fun, and that really matters. I feel like I'm kind of playing. Joining us is Bridget Alomes. She, Alomes, you know, it's just, I want to say it right, Alomes. Good?
That's right. You got
it. And it's A-L-O-M-E-S, people, so it's not like I'm just having a moment here. It's like, okay, how do you say that? She's the founder of Natural Pod and the CEO of Play at Natural Pod, and from this interview, you can obviously know why she has earned that moniker. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back and talk about the environment.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And there's a couple of announcements that I have to make before we get on with our guest, who is Bridget Alomes. She is the founder and CEO of Natural Pod and the CEO of Play. Two brief announcements. Every year we do our Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge, and this is our sixth year. It starts October 7th, and we ask workplaces all over the state to submit why they should be considered as Arizona's Greenest Workplace. And it doesn't involve LEED certification, and you have to be, you know, gold, platinum, or silver. Excuse me. It matters. I'm all choked up here. That you have a commitment to going greener. And what are your practices around recycling and not using plastic bottles and changing out the lighting in your business, business establishment. But all of the components that you see. So check it out. Our website at Mrs. Green's World. .com. It'll be coming in a couple of weeks. And then the other thing is a shout out for Mrs. Green's World. You heard our announcement, our promo to look at our sustainers model. And I'm passionately asking people to consider becoming a sustainer. And here is why. We want to remain free and independent. And the bigger we get and the greater our impact, the more at risk you become for that, because some big donor or sponsor comes along and they have a vested interest, and before you know it, you're putting a commercial or an ad on that you're really not authentic about. And that's not going to happen in Mrs. Green's World because of people that are stepping up and becoming sustainers or becoming business members of Mrs. Green's World from all over the country. So take a look at it. It's on our website. We say preservation of the planet is not an option, it's a necessity, and consider becoming a part of our own very special, the PBS or the NPR of green. I sneak that in there and hope they don't get me someday. So Bridget, thanks for listening through that, but it's really important, and I'm sure you know that. How do we continue and make Mrs. Green's World to continue being sustainable? So now on with the show. Let's talk about the environment and everything that you do to commit to the highest environmental standards from start to finish, from sourcing to shipping to installation. You go, girl.
Awesome. Well, you know what? A commitment to sustainability and the environment is a responsibility of all of us. And I really, really feel that commitment in terms of it's a core principle for us here at Naturopod. And, you know, we're authentic in every step of the way, and starting from the fact that we use only FSC-certified chain of custody wood-certified materials. And what FSC stands for is Forest Steward Council.
That's huge.
So it's actually
huge.
Yeah, it is huge. It is huge. So those products are, you know, without formaldehyde. They're usually typically with naturally finished with a beeswax. and there's no harmful chemicals or toxic off-gassing. So, you know, it's interesting. When I first started this, I looked at not all wood is created equal. And it's interesting, when you put a lacquer on top of a wood, it automatically becomes no longer naturally antibacterial, because wood itself, without finish on it, is actually naturally antibacterial. So
I had no idea about that. So that is really a big one. And tell us again, wood without some type of chemical finish is naturally antibacterial? I heard
that
right?
That's,
wow.
You heard that right. So, you know, if you think about it, in the learning environment, often educators will have to sterilize their plastic toys because of the children putting in their mouths and things like that. And they're obviously using a chemical typically to do that. And I often challenge that and say, well, you know, you're cutting your apple to snack on a wooden chopping board without chemicals. There's a reason why that. So, and how do we clean chopping boards? We're trying with warm soap and water. So it's a sort of an education piece that, you know, wool is also naturally antibacterial, which is one of the reasons why Icebreaker sort of says that you can wear their sweaters for 40 days and don't have to wash them, right? So, you know, wool, natural materials that are, you know, immediately can be chemical free. So for us, the finish on our wood is incredibly essential. We're also looking for heirloom products that are going to go back into the earth and decompose, which is incredibly important. And then for us, it's like, you know, we're not only do we use FSC certified materials, we have FSC certified manufacturing locally, and we're actually an FSC certified company as well, which is the triple chain of command as a commitment to the environment. In terms of being mindful of our carbon footprint, we actually, all of our product is consolidated and flat packed in terms of shipping, so that we create and
wow.
build crates.
Right. Yeah. Minimizing the space that you take up for shipping.
That's right. So everything, all of our crates are created from off-cut and waste wood. And then obviously we use minimal packaging. So when a client receives their product, it's flat packed, ready to assemble, obviously, you know, reducing the shipping impact on the world, as well as the usability. I mean, you're shipping a complete assembled table isn't necessarily an option. So there's actually a video just today that's been posted on our Facebook page and on our website of a school, that a group of families and educators that came together to put the furniture together. So it's designed in a way that, you know, you don't require a professional install team to make it happen. You can certainly come together as a community to make that happen. So for us, everything that we source and everything that we work with, the typical products we work with is wood, wool, and silk. We use plant-dyed coloring for all of our plant dyes within our wood products as well as our silk products. And one little bit of tidbit here is that head lice doesn't stick to silk. So often with why am I talking about this?
Oh, it's every parent's nightmare. And my daughter had thick red hair. We spent hours, my husband mostly, with the fine tooth comb, literally. Kids get head lice in school. It's the parents' worst nightmare.
It is, and typically, you know, kids love to dress up and put on costumes and put on hats.
And use each other's brushes and combs if they're girls.
Yeah, so we really try to encourage educators to really think about, like, the value of that costume. Like, you know, you can only have so many policemen or firemen or princesses or queens in your learning environment, but with silk scarves that are plant-dyed, you can be anything that you want to be, and of course, in head lice and stick to silk. So, you know, there's been a lot of intention and thinking into every material that we have and every step of the way that we communicate with our customers around the use of the products and using beeswax and products that is obviously clean for the children. And then really considering, you know, you are buying something that's going to go back to the earth, something of quality. It's not going to be, you know, a piece of MDF with laminate on the top and, you know, ends up in a big bin at some point because it can't be recycled.
Right,
it can't be
right.
reused.
It's most of what you're talking about is I know wool is totally compostable, and silk, and the wood. I mean, it's just really, it's almost like a cradle to cradle concept. So I love that concept, and I'll tell you, I never thought we were going to hit on head lice, but that really does make me laugh because it's really, it's like, oh my gosh, it's one of the most horrific nightmares of our childhood experience for, you know, as parents with Emily, and knowing that this could put a little minimize that. It shows to me not just being funny, but the depth and breadth to which you have gone to make sure that this is a truly organic, integrated concept that you're bringing to communities to inspire and change them. It's you had me from hello when you met me anyway. So it's like, I want to hear more about what this woman has to say. What about the, the spreading the word? I'm not sure, I don't want to call it marketing, but is your growth, which has been very consistent, there's two parts to this question. Is it a principal invites another principal over and they see this magnificent environment? How does the word spread and how will you keep up with the growth? Those are two really important questions. How can you grow and maintain the quality? And how does the word spread? You can answer whichever one you want first, because those things really matter to me.
Yeah, and they absolutely matter to me. And I mean, for us, this is not, we're not just about furniture. We are natural play.
Right.
We see our responsibility as convening those larger conversations. And so, we're very active on our Facebook community, which is close to 28,000 followers right now.
I loved that when I went to see that number. It's like, you go, it's really great.
Well, it's for us, it's like the furniture is a means for a conversation. It's about the greater change and the empowerment, inspiring piece that we can have with others. So, we've done natural play research reports. We have a natural play guide. We have a lot of free resources that we give to our educators and families. That's really the first priority piece for us. And again, the furniture piece comes underneath that as a means for a conversation. And so, ultimately in the future, if you think about the goal of this, it's to take away it is about a purchasing decision and making it more around what impact are we trying to have. How does this meet our vision? And making it less about institutional purchase too, right? So it's like, we need 3,000 chairs and, 10,000 desks or whatever it may be. Well, why do you need all that? And what are you using it for? And where is it going to go? And, just sort of have a think of the larger piece, because not all spaces should be created equal. Every child thinks differently. We're all unique. All educators work differently. They may have a curriculum that they follow, but ultimately how they deliver that curriculum, how they create their learning environment. I mean, you can see it now. People are getting so excited about going back to school in the next few weeks that people are saying, look at my learning environment. I'm doing this, and what do you think about that? They're the kind of conversations that we want to have. In terms of how we grow and how we expand, for us it's about, it comes down to keeping it as local as we possibly can and keeping it as low carbon footprint as we can. So as we expand into different markets around the world, it's having pod bases of manufacturing that will meet our sustainability requirements, FSC certification, FSC certified products, and again, how to get them to the market quickly. So, for me, what's important is I know who made that product. I know that person personally, right? I mean, I know it's not always going to be the way, but it's like supporting a local economy with a local product and then delivering it to a child gives them the message of that. The child says, Gina, where did this desk come from and who made it and what is it made of? And you can authentically answer that question. Just like the same way when you go to buy an organic apple and they have the 100-mile diet or whatever it may be, the teacher or the educator or the parent can say, this apple came from this farm and it's grown in this way and it's from this variety, right? It's that educational piece of caring about where things come from and really having an aspect of that. And I think if we can have it in our learning environments as the canvas and the infrastructure, wow, you can imagine the conversations coming up in the future when children are being advocates around our environment and sustainability, because it's embodied within them, right?
Yeah, and I can see myself as the Southwest division head. We'll be sourcing from locally sourced cactus and saguaros and ocotillos, but it's your vision is so well thought out, and I think you will be so able to meet those challenges because it's so intentional. I mean, everything about it that I've read and talking to you about your commitment is so intentional. So that means it'll work. What about, I'd like you to share in the minutes we have left, What was the most fun project or a favorite project that you worked on that you'd like to share with us that puts it all together? Do you have one that pops to mind, or are they all tied for first?
You know, there isn't just one project, because what I really rate this on and what I really sense, I mean, it's just, you know, like any business, this is a true labor of love, and we're really committed to our authentic vision and mission around sustainability and natural play. But the moments that really impact me the most is when I get to be in a learning environment with the children of any age, and I have a conversation with them, and or I get to engage and play with them. That is the most important piece for me, because then I'm getting that affirmation that I'm having that direct impact to the children that really matter. Yes, the adults are important. Of course, we want to inspire them and have that. But in the day, we're doing this for the children. It's all for the children. And seeing them engage and play, or one time, I just share a memory more than a project, but I was in a learning environment, and these children wanted to build a train. Now, of course, these are younger children, and they had four or five of the benches together, and they created this long train, and they turned the benches over, and they were kind of upside down. And they asked it to drive the train, And I mean, I'm 5'8", so I'm not exactly a smaller, you know, I'm quite tall. So I'm sitting on the bench, and my knees are almost touching my ears. And I'm trying to drive this train, and these kids are like, you know, they're fully into it. They're like, they were like that we were going on a train ride somewhere. And I remember walking out of there going, you know what, like, there you go. Like, always thinking about what else it can be. And that imagination, that inspiration, that's what gets me really excited.
It sounds, you can just hear it in your voice. It's really fun. And what do you see, like, I wonder about things like, do you ever see where there'll be another manufacturing location because of the expansion? I mean, is there a vision for that? Because you're really experiencing significant growth.
Yes, well, we actually are looking very seriously at a number of locations in the U.S. Currently to help expand those movements. I mean, it comes back to where is the most acceptance and innovation around this type of thinking.
So they're going to embrace it.
Yeah, there's a couple of really awesome core markets already that we're looking into, but that's our intention. Our intention is, again, as I mentioned before, is having everything as close to the source as possible in order to keep that carbon footprint down, and, again, for the children to even be able to go and visit, you know, where did this come from, and be able to see that piece. So there are many local communities that we're in discussions with and local manufacturers in the United States that can really support us with our growth, and we look forward to sharing more on that as further things develop.
It's called a revisit to Mrs. Green's World Show to share the news. I love to have repeat guests that we can recapture where you were and where you are and where the expansion has taken you. I love when we're able to follow that, and I have a feeling you and I are going to stay connected, maybe through Social Venture Network, which is truly one of the best experiences I've had in my 64 years on the planet. So let's talk about some details. I want people to know, because it's fun to visit your website, naturalpod.com. That's all you have to do is put in your search engine. The Facebook page is naturalpod, so go in and face that. Your Twitter handle is naturalpod. And I don't know if you're on Instagram. That's as far as I got. I would assume you're on Pinterest.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so that's really good. Yes. And I just want to have you have the last word in terms of the best way for people to contact you and why, what would they be looking for if an educator or principal is listening to this? What's the best way to get in touch with you to move this forward?
Yes, so my recommendation would be to reach out to us at naturalpod.com. Look at some of the videos and the galleries that are there. Be inspired, embrace the beauty that is there, and reach out to us. Reach out and have a conversation with us around some of the things that really inspire you and how you see us, that we could maybe support you. And even if it's just in one small step, like it's all about making the change for the future. We can never go from 0 to 101, but we can certainly make small steps each and every day to have that true impact. So do reach us out to us at naturalpod.com. Check out our Facebook community online, and there's some incredible posts, videos, photos, comments.
Yeah, join the over 28,000 people joining you on Facebook. That is such an exciting number. Okay, I have 30 seconds to forward promote next week's show, a very important topic. We're going to have Janet Noodleman, Director of Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and Director of Program and Policy for the Breast Cancer Fund. And we're going to talk about prevention first. So I hope you can join us. It's going to be a very important show. Bridget, thank you for showing up in my life and for everything you do. Everybody, make it a great green week.
Thank you.